This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Tom Hartman joins me on the program, a nationally syndicated radio talk show host. You can hear him every afternoon at 12 noon on our sister station, WVAX 1450 AM. Tom, how are you, sir?
Hey, Coy, I am great, but I'll get better. I hope the same is true of you.
Yes, indeed. It's good to hear your voice, and we want to let folks know. Now, remind me your latest book, because I can't keep up with them. They come so fast.
My most recent book is published by Viking Penguin, and it's called Threshold, The Crisis of Western Culture. It's out in hardcover right now. It'll be out in paperback in a couple of months.
Fantastic. And what was the thesis for your latest book?
The core assumption of it is that it's not global warming that's killing us, it's not pollution that's killing us, it's not genetically modified foods or technology or any of that stuff, that those are all symptoms of what's killing us and the rest of the earth, which is our culture. And that if we don't re-examine our fundamental cultural assumptions, which are found buried in our religions and are found buried in our assumptions of who we are relative to every other living thing on this earth, if we don't change that, then we, at the very least, our culture faces somewhere between crisis and extinction. And at the very worst, our species faces that spectrum.
What do you think? We're talking with Tom Hartman of the nationally syndicated radio talk show host. Tom, what do you think is there when you study the culture that's most threatening, that maybe people are least aware of, that it's just almost subconscious?
Well, culture is like air. You know, very few people think about it. You don't notice it. You can't see it. It's invisible. And very rarely do people ever bother to question it. But in the book, I raise a couple of cultural illnesses, basically mental illnesses. The first is the belief that humans are separate, fundamentally, inherently, supernaturally separate from everything else on Earth and everything else in the universe, that we are a species apart, that because we're capable of self-reflection and thinking on a high order, that we don't have to conform to the laws of nature, that we can create our own laws, that we can grow forever, we can solve all problems it's a Cartesian worldview, which really started with Aristotle, and actually really started before that, but he popularized it.
Right, right.
And long before René Descartes. So that kind of atomistic, mechanical worldview is really, really destructive. You know, I can take a car apart, I can take my car apart, or at least I used to be able to, before computers, and spread it all over my driveway and then put it back together and make it run. I actually did that with a 67 Mustang once long ago. But if I took a cow apart in my driveway and then tried to put it back together, it would not move. There's something fundamentally different about living things and machines, and we have to get as a culture that the entire planet is a living organism that we're part of, and we don't. So there's that kind of intellectual disconnect. There's also a spiritual disconnect. I'm reluctant to call it religious, but it because every one of the world's major religions has a connected part where people in those religions get what I'm talking about. They're called the mystics, you know, the St. John of the Cross and Catholicism and Brother Francis and Rumi and Islam on the Baal Shem Tov in Judaism, and on the list goes. But instead, most folks who consider themselves religious basically put God in a box and visit him once a week, you know, on Sundays or Saturdays or whatever, and or Fridays. And that's something that needs to be reexamined. Our relationship to each other, the idea of hierarchy, particularly male dominance, is very, very destructive. And just for a very practical reason. When this country was founded, there were a billion people on planet Earth. We hit our first billion in 1800, in fact, during Jefferson's presidency. Our second billion took not, 100,000 years. It took only 130 years, 1930, when Franklin Roosevelt was sworn into office. We hit our second billion. Our third billion was 1960 with Jack Kennedy. Fourth billion, that only took 30 years. fourth billion only took 14 years, the fifth billion only took 13 years, the sixth billion took only 11 years. So we're exponentially now, or nearly, increasing the human population on the planet. And it turns out that the thing that's driving that is that in those societies where women don't have equal power with men, population explodes. And in those cultures where women have relatively equal power with men, population stabilizes. So we need to be working worldwide to empower women as aggressively and rapidly as we can, and to push back against the kind of troglodyte, anti-feminist worldview that's in our culture represented by people like Rush Limbaugh and some of the religious fundamentalists that says that women should be quiet and sit in the back of the room and have their head covered and whatnot. And if not, then you call them feminazis.
Like a child seen and not heard. Yeah.
Right.
We're talking with best-selling author Tom Hartman. He is the host of the Tom Hartman radio program, the most listened-to progressive radio program in America today. His new book is Threshold. Speaking of culture, let me ask you this. There seems to be the culture of democracy and the culture of capitalism. We like to think, I think, that one caused the other and they sort of grew together, but they seem to be in America today almost at war, if at the very least at some type of tenuous struggle, and that you have people actually coming forward saying that that one is more important than the other, and that we're hearing so many voices today, the subtext being that capitalism is more important than democracy.
Yeah, and that's a mythology that was promoted very heavily by Ayn Rand in her book Atlas Shrugged, and by the objectivists and picked up by libertarians. And there's simply no objective evidence of it. One of the most aggressive and effective capitalist economies in the world right now is the People's Republic of China, which is a semi-pseudo-communist, I'm not even sure you can call it communist anymore, it's just a plain old flat-out dictator, a brutal dictatorship. And, you know, historically, some of the most successful capitalist systems were Mussolini's Italy, Franco's Spain, Pinochet's Chile, were highly authoritarian and highly capitalist, and they went hand in hand, the Shah's Iran. So capitalism does not need democracy. In fact, democracy is a hindrance to unrestrained capitalism. And the history of this country, and I wrote another book about this called Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. The history of this country is the history of the dynamic tension and sometimes face-off battle between small-d democracy and laissez-faire capitalism, you know, unrestrained capitalism. And we've swung back and forth over and over again through a series of oscillations since the country was founded. And we're, I think, in the process right now of swinging one more time, hopefully, in a positive direction.
Yeah. Well, with that as a sort of a foreground here, as an introduction, let's talk about the health insurance debate. And I prefer to call it truly a debate about health insurance and not really about health care. It's mostly about how health care is delivered and paid for in America. That seems to be the focus of the debate. What are your thoughts on how this has been going, the summit last week, and what you think the Democrats will do in Washington next?
I think that there's a lot of nibbling around the edges that needs to be done that's going to make life a lot better for a lot of Americans that the Democrats are going to push through, they've already got 60 votes for 95% of it, and the remaining 5% they're going to push through with reconciliation, you know, with the help of the House. And I think that they're going to make that happen. Frankly, I think that, you know, their fate in 2010 and the Obama presidency depends upon it. But true fundamental, but Coy, you're so right to differentiate health insurance reform from health care reform, because a true reform of this system would mean saying to somebody like Stephen Jay Hemsley, who's the CEO of United Healthcare, who has had that position for 5 years and is, in addition to his $10 million a year paycheck, is sitting on $744 million worth of unexercised stock options. So, you know, his compensation for 5 years of work is over $750 million. In fact, it's closer to $800 million. And to say to somebody like that, sorry, there's no reason for you to exist, for that business to exist. There's no reason for the United States is the only industrialized country in the world, bar none, that allows for-profit corporations to offer primary health care insurance. We're the only one. And when T.R. Reid did a special, he did a two-hour documentary for PBS about this called Wellness Around the World or Sick Around the World or something like that, turn it into a book. And PBS, and he made that statement in the second hour and pointed that out and documented it, and PBS actually stripped that out because some of their sponsors are health insurance companies. And he was so offended by that, he took his name off the second hour of the documentary and went public, you know, went to the New York Times with it. And it's just crazy. But the Supreme Court ruling a few weeks ago, the Citizens United case, that said that corporations can now drop unlimited amounts of money into political campaigns to either build up a candidate that they like or utterly destroy a candidate that they don't, means that, you know, a Senate race that typically is won or lost based on $4 or $5 million worth of campaigning, pretty much anywhere in the United States other than California, where it might be $10 or $12 million. I mean, that's walking around money for a guy who earns $744 million for 5 years' work. That's chump change.
Yeah.
So, you know, just that one CEO, and he's just one CEO out of 8 or 9 companies of that size in that industry. You know, if he were to get together with a few others and say, hey, let's put together $100 million and just blow, you know, 10, 20, 30, 50 politicians right out of the water. They could easily do it. Or let's identify, you know, our favorites and elevate them to stardom. They could easily do it now. And I'm telling you, the guys in Washington, D.C. know this. I was there for CPAC, and this was the main topic that everybody was talking about behind the scenes, and nobody would talk about on the air. And when I got on Fox News, when I was there, I tried to bring it up, and the host shut me down immediately and changed the topic. Nobody wants to talk about this out loud.
We're talking with Tom Hartmann, best-selling author and host of the Tom Hartmann Radio Program. You can hear it every afternoon at 12 noon on WVAX 1450 AM here in Central Virginia. Tom, there seems to be just such a lack of balance that we're very steadily recreating the kind of country we revolted against in the 1770s, that people stood up and risked their lives and their fortune just to oppose because they realized that things had gotten too far out of whack. And with that in mind, tell us the story of the Tea Party. You've written about this and mm-hmm. And how this sort of symbolizes what we're talking about, the collusion between corporate America and our government, that they have seized the reins of our government, and that this was actually at the heart of the original Tea Party movement, not the one today, which seems to almost support that idea, but the original Tea Party movement revolted against this idea that corporate America would own your government.
Yeah, I think the modern Tea Party is a little confused. Now, this is in my book, Unequal Protection, that I mentioned earlier. I actually, when I was writing that book, because I wanted to make it, you know, a whole arc of kind of American history, I found a copy. I bought it from an antique bookstore. In fact, it cost me about half my advance on the book, of the autobiography of the only man who was in the Boston Tea Party and actually wrote an account of it, because they all swore secrecy for 50 years. And he was, you know, and he wrote this like 50 years later in 1830, and was one of the few people who survived that long. He was an old man. He was only 17 when it happened. And his name is George Robert Twelvetree Hughes. And he wrote this incredible documentary of it, which I quote at length in Unequal Protection. It's the first time it's ever seen the light of day in America, as far as I know. And he pointed out that in 1773, that Britain had all these laws about what could and couldn't be manufactured in the United States, but the tea was the biggest business. And there were all these small, there were thousands of tea shops up and down the East Coast. It was one of the major entrepreneurial ventures, tea shops and bars. You know, people either drank alcohol or drank tea, or both. And the tea shops were community centers, and they were political centers, and they were just, they were all kinds of things. And many of them were getting their tea from independent ships that would buy them from the Dutch trading companies, or they'd buy them from, you know, through the islands down in Cuba, whatnot. And the British declared all them smugglers. And they were unable to stop them. They even hired Captain Kidd at one point to try and stop them. They were unable to stop them. So finally what the British did in 1773 was they not only lowered the tax on tea, because tea was taxed in the United States, they not only lowered it for the British East India Company, which was the Walmart of the day. British East India Company created the state of Virginia. They created the colony of Jamestown. It was named after King James, and Virginia was named after Queen Elizabeth, who chartered the British East India Company in 1601, the Virgin Queen, thus Virginia. So the East India Company virtually owned all the trade, and so what the Tea Act of 1773 did is it was a massive tax cut for the East India Company so that they could drop the price on tea so far below that of what the smugglers could afford to bring it in for, that they would put all the small entrepreneurs out of business. And so what you had in the Boston Tea Party was a revolt of small business people in up and down the East Coast in the United States, small tea shop entrepreneurs, basically, and all kinds of other businesses associated with them, against the largest corporation in the world. And then that... You know, they were successful. It was $1 million act of vandalism against the three ships in the Boston Harbor. And then a month later, England passed the Boston Ports Act saying that until the city of Boston paid $1 million to the British East India Company in reparations, they were going to keep the port closed. And that was really the beginning of the American Revolution.
We're talking with Tom Hartman of WVAX, our sister station. You can hear him every afternoon at 12 noon. So the real Boston Tea Party then was this revolt by small business owners against a government that was in cahoots with the Walmart of the day, the East India Company, and was passing laws to benefit this large corporate entity against the free market, against the small business owner.
That's right, and most people think that, you know, when the colonists were yelling taxation without representation, that they were upset that they were being taxed. Well, I mean, they were upset that they were being taxed, but what they really were speaking of was that the East India Company got a tax cut, got a tax break. The richest got this huge tax break, and the average person had no say in it. It's like shades of George Bush's tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. That's the kind of thing that set off the colonists.
We're talking with Tom Hartman, and Jack is waiting very patiently online, too. Jack, you're on with Tom Hartman. Go right ahead.
Hi. First of all, Coy, I wanted to compliment you on your local show. It's really a gem here.
Thank you very much.
Very balanced and really good topics, and I like the discussions you have regarding freedom of speech. And, Tom, I like your show a lot. I do have a little bit of a beef with you, so a little warning here.
Okay.
Regarding the Tea Party, the book you mentioned is available on Google Books if people are interested. The one
yeah, it
you
is
mentioned,
now.
Free of charge. Tom, I wanted to ask you, there's a Harvard law professor who's an advisor to President Obama. His name is Cass Sunstein. He recently wrote a 29-page paper where he advocates the infiltration of 9/11 truth groups, and he proposes silencing freedom of speech. And as a champion of freedom of speech and a person who makes his living, and I don't want to put it in those terms because I think you're doing public service, but as a person who's on the air and depends completely on freedom of speech, I wonder why a person of your stature hasn't brought more light to that recent alarming paper by Cass Sunstein at Harvard University.
I've actually read it, and I'm guessing you haven't.
Jack?
Yes, sir.
I'm guessing you have not read it.
You haven't read it?
No, I'm guessing that you have not read.
Well, I have read it.
Paper.
I've read it in detail.
Okay.
I've written a,
yeah.
written a
you know,
big
I,
blog
I
article
it too,
about
it. I don't see where
I don't want to plug my blog and
like that.
Well, it's
basically,
okay.
In my mind, what he's saying is we need to do a better PR job with these people, not infiltrate them and take them over.
No, that's not correct.
You want to give me some language, for example?
I could give you specific examples. Where he advocates infiltration of these groups. He advocates entering chat rooms and discrediting the people in there using various techniques. And
yeah, this is,
he even
this is stuff
proposes
that the Republicans have been doing
making,
forever. I mean, during the 2000 and 2004 election, I had over at TomHartman.com, we have a very active message board. And there were a couple of guys on there who every time any of our members would say anything positive about Al Gore or John Kerry, there was these three or four people who would come in with, very well-reasoned and very passionate arguments against John Kerry. And they were very nice people, and they got to know everybody, and, you know, we didn't want to ban them as trolls because they weren't behaving like trolls. They were very nice guys. And after the 2004 election, one of them came out on the board, and he said, I've been paid 25 cents a post by the RNC or by a group that the RNC hired to be on your message board. And he said, I'm on about 9 other message boards, and I'm paid by the post, which is why, you know, he was always responding that fast. There is and has been for well over a decade a very organized effort on the right to have people, paid people, who are in the message boards, particularly progressive message boards, but they're also in the conservative ones, but they don't quite so much need to be in the conservative ones because there's lots of folks who will simply do that anyway, but who are go into progressive message boards to rebut them. And you can see them right now. You go over to Huffington Post and read the comments. Go over to commondreams.org and read the comments. Come to our website and read the comments. And you can identify these folks once you know that that's what's going on. And, you know, and they'll make the same points over and over, and they'll actually do their homework. And like I said, sometimes this one guy who he actually joined the Marine Corps after the 2004 election. And everybody in the chat room liked him, even after he had told us all he was being paid for all these posts. He joined the Marine Corps. He sent us a picture of himself being deployed to Iraq. It's posted, or it was for a while, I mean, it's been years now, on our message board. And, you know, it's amazing. But, you know, so the extent to which Cass Sunstein is suggesting that progressives or, you know, people in the administration need to do better messaging, need to get out there, need to get their voices heard, I frankly don't disagree with it. I don't see it as some nasty Machiavellian plot. I would prefer when people are doing that they identify themselves. What's good for the goose is good for the gander, I think.
Tom Hartman, he is the host of the nationally syndicated Tom Hartman program, and you can hear it every afternoon at 12 noon on WVAX 1450. Check him out online at tomhartman.com and buy his new book, Threshold. Tom, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, Coy. It's great talking with you, too.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.